welcome everybody to yet another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your host, Dakota Morgan, coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona. And right now, we have a wonderful guest on the show, Andrew McLean. Oh my God. But I do got to say, though, if you guys are listening to this episode with the, during the week of the release, English, do you speak it? then you guys are getting this week's bonus episode because of scheduling, me being busy, Andrew and I, we have make sure we're getting this episode out to you guys. This is this week's interview. Last episode was me announcing a comic series, but I felt like that was cheaping you guys, even though I was announcing my own work. So here's this week's episode with Andrew McLean on the show. He has done Apocalyptic Girl. He's done Headlopper. He's also the writer and the artist, and his wife does the editing. It's beautiful. That's the relationship I want. But so Andrew is on the show. We geek out about his books and talk about monsters as two kaiju fans usually do. When we find each other, we click. We group together. We herd. We're like, yes, hello, fellow kaiju fan. And we geek out about monsters. We talk about finding the, in moments of darkness, finding that true self as an artist and finding the true self in your own work sort of thing. We really get in-depth with that, and in-depth about his books and working in the comic book business and the future a little bit, too, of artists and what we like to do. And it's really a good chill of us nerding out and whatnot. And it was late where Andrew was, so I didn't want to keep him for too long, so it might be a little bit of a shorter episode today, folks. But that's because I respect the man. So everyone, make sure you guys subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or comicchronicle.podbean.com because I do have to say, folks, it helps us greatly. Leave a review, share the show on social media, hashtag the Comic Chronicle Podcast or Comic Chronicle. It helps greatly. We can do bigger, better things. Maybe come out to you guys for more Comic Cons and whatnot. Who knows, folks? Thanks everyone for tuning in. And our interview with Andrew. Yeah, and we're recording. Andrew, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. And I know we've had a little bit of the schedule thing. I think it's on my end where things just got busy and whatnot. But I'm glad we could finally have you on the show because holy shit, are you good at what you do.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, like, you do so much. Like, you do art, and you're an artist, you're a writer for comics, and I think I reread Headlopper, by the way, right, the thing you sent me not too long ago, by the way, in an email. You're like, oh, here's the copy of this, take a look at it. And I reread that copy you sent me, and oh my God.
Well, I'm so glad you liked it, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. It's one of those, like, I'm just curious. Andrew, where do you get the idea for that?
Like, in general, or, like, the beginning? Like, the genesis?
I mean, kind of, yeah, because I'm curious, because I'm like, this is badass. This is really cool series. And you're doing the artwork and writing the scripts for it, right?
Yeah.
How do you have time? Because there's so much there.
That is the challenge. Time is definitely the biggest obstacle, for sure. I mean, writing doesn't take too long, but drawing just takes, it's a hurdle and a half. It's like nonstop. But yeah, I mean, my wife helps me a whole lot. She's the editor and the letter on the book.
Really?
And I've got her to work with, like, on a daily basis. So that's a big help. But yeah, I think comics in general is just, it's a slog. It's just, the work is endless.
It's true. And I've talked about it plenty of times with people on the show before, and it's one of those things where if people think it's done within, like, a week or 3 days or something like that, you're a fool. Like, and especially the detail you do, because people can maybe say, oh, there's not that much detail. Like, you're an idiot because there's so much detail in your work, man. Like, I just have to get out of the way because I was sitting there looking at it again like, Jesus, this is brilliant. And like, it's really iconic, I want to say, by the way. Like, how did you get that, like, look down that you were looking for on this?
I mean, I think I'm sure you're probably referencing, like, art style or something. It's a slow thing. It's, I remember the artists that I always really enjoy always have a very identifiable style. And so kind of when I realized that I wanted to make comics for a living, it was, like, really important to me to kind of try to find, I think for a lot of comic artists, it felt really important for me to try to find, like, a style that, you know, a voice, you know, a kind of, like, a unique voice. But you just can't come up with it all in one sitting. You can't come up with, you know, how you want to make everything look and just, like, in your head and be like, all right, and commit it to paper. It's this slow thing of, like, adding and subtracting, you know, concepts and ideas from other artists that you admire, and you know, slowly but surely fine-tuning the skills and like, constantly trying something new, experimenting with something, and, like, every once in a while, you're like, oh, I like this idea, like, I'm going to kind of incorporate this full-time, and other times you try something, and it's it's junk, and you're just kind of, like, you got a batch of pages where you experimented, and you're like, well, I don't love them, but I got to move on, and so it's slow. You definitely can't, you can't just, like, you know, right out of the gate, have this kind of fully formed concept, and I'm always changing. I'm always trying to improve or add or subtract something from my work.
I mean, it shows, man. Like, how long have you been in the business, by the way? Because it's probably sort of stuff I should have looked up, but I'm just curious in the sense of, like, how long have you been working in comics?
I mean, I've been drawing since I was very little. I don't remember ever not drawing. Even when I wasn't, like, taking it seriously, but I think I've been kind of really buckling down for about, I think about 8 years now. There was a period of time where I was just, like, just kind of realized, like, you know what, like, this is what I want to do, and if I want to do it, I have to just commit, like, just full time, just go right in and just put in the time and the effort, even the stuff that's tough and hard.
Oh, man, I feel that 100%. Like, as a guy who works in film myself, and also a fellow, I'm a comic book writer too, for freelance for a comic company so far, just one, and doing three series now is just one of those things where you can't just do it on the side. People are like, oh, we have all these jobs, you're doing it on the side. Like, no, comics are full time. Like, despite what people may think.
And that's tough, you know, because at some point for everyone, they're going to have to make that kind of leap of faith and just, you know, if you need all that time to, like, do it, at some point you have to just, like, just jump and, like, be like, I don't know if this is gonna work, and you have to try it at full time at some point. It's funny to say now, but for me, at one point I couldn't find a job, and so I had this time where I was applying for jobs, you know, during the day, and then, you know, I spend the morning, like, filling out job applications. I spend the afternoon drawing comics. And at the time, it was really stressful, you know, because I wasn't making, like, any money. But in hindsight, that was really, that time was well spent, even though it was scary.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, I think that fear, it's one of those things where I think as a lot of us artists in general in the creative arts, that we feel that a lot. We have that time where, you know, yes, eating is helpful. It's nice to be able to have electricity and heat and food, you know, so it really is. But I think that fear, and almost sometimes not even that fear, but it could be fear, it could be lust, it could be the love for what you're doing and the passion for it. And as a filmmaker, that's a P word, is passion. You know, I never want to hear that. That really makes you put everything you have into your work and really truly be able to find who you are and what you do a little bit, no matter what, as a writer, an artist, filmmaker, whatever it may be. So you found that with your art. And I think that's almost something to listeners can really use to whatever they're doing, you know? Like, I think that's a good time for anybody. Like, that's your year one Batman. Like, that's year one. This is really you. You're out there. You've had the past. Now you're buckling down. You're seeing who you are, and you're rolling with it. And now the future's changed forever, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, I think it needs to be a little bit, like, of an obsession to some degree. Yeah. 'Cause it takes so much time. You need to be able to just sit there and make these things. And, like, it's hard to imagine being able to spend that much time on one thing, especially when you're, like, kind of, you have to be self-motivated. It's kind of like I feel like you kind of, like, almost have like, a little bit of an obsession with it, you know?
Let it be your addiction. Let it be your drug. Yeah. And then go for it. The what now?
No, I agree, yeah. I sometimes think about how much time I spend with my, like, nose a couple inches from the paper, and I'm like, this is a weird thing to do.
And then you're like, okay, no, I can't do anything else, so this is it. Sort of thing. Like,
pretty much.
And you lift up for a little bit. It's like you always, there's this area where, like, this, I don't remember who told me this, but you lift up from what, you lift your head up from what you're doing a little bit as an artist. And you look around and you're like, do I want to swipe groceries? Nah. Continue back to work. Sort of thing. It's like, we love what we do. We don't really want to do the other stuff. You know, we're not really 9-to-5ers a little bit. We like to do the art jobs, and this is kind of who we are a little bit. I'm fucking honored to see that and proud to see that you found it, and I think listeners out there who are tuning in that need to really take that in the mind of sometimes you gotta go through a little bit of bad to find your true self, you know?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and I see there, it's a little bit of a shame, but I'll hear from a lot of kind of students, and they'll be really worried about their art style and their career and all that, and a lot of them are really, really young, and they're worrying about things that, you know, they probably don't have to worry about yet, you know what I mean? And it's a little bit of the cart before the horse, you know. It's really like, at the end of the day, all that really matters is that you're sitting there and you're putting in the work, you know?
Exactly. Oh, God. Now, kind of gear shift a little bit. I'm curious, because, Andrew, I gotta ask, man, are you a fan of, like, sci-fi and fantasy a little bit here?
Yeah, those are my favorite genres.
Yes, I could tell. Like, I could really, so I'm, like, looking at you, like, this guy, he's gotta, because as a fellow lover of that genre, if the conversation before this of Killer Clowns from Outer Space doesn't say what I love, then, I mean, come on, like, it really shows in the work, man. Like, so was that an inspiration to, like, get in the, like, comics a little bit and maybe be an artist? Like, was that, did you see a movie or a show or maybe a book or something like that? Be like, I want to draw. I want to create a little bit.
I mean, I always, from the time I was really young, always loved drawing. I always loved kind of big imagination stuff. When I was a kid, I didn't have a ton of, I loved comics, but I grew up pretty rural, so we didn't have a comic book store. Yeah. Anywhere near where we live. So I had a small collection of comics. I don't even know where they came from. And I would just pore over them again and again and again. And so I loved the couple issues of Spider-Man I had. I was obsessed with Spider-Man. And the other thing that I eventually had a copy of the last issue of Man Without Fear.
Frank Miller.
Yeah, exactly. And John Romita Jr. And I think my brother must have traded on the playground for some pogs or some magic cards or something, because I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden he brought this thing home, and the drawings are amazing. It was super violent. I loved that there was blood in it. And I absolutely loved that. It was maybe the first time I saw a comic book that wasn't, I mean, it's Daredevil, so it's a superhero. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was a comic that he's not dressed like a superhero. He's dressed in, like, sweats and this really rad headband thing. And I just thought it was, like, the raddest thing to have this blind guy running around just cracking skulls.
Yeah.
And it made an impact on me to say, like, oh, comics can be drawn this way, which, you know, is in such a refined style. It's not the most, you know, indie adventurous thing, but it's so refined and so uniquely him that between the style and the writing and the costume designs, I was like, it really kind of opened my eyes that comics can be, you know, a wide variety of things. But, I mean, beyond that, I grew up loving kind of like special effects and monsters and things. So I think of like Headlopper. A thing I kind of try to like capture a little bit is what it felt like being a kid watching TV with my older brother Adam, you know, usually some TBS, you know, rerun stuff of maybe like, I don't know, Terminator or for that matter, like Conan the Barbarian or some, you know, or like Clash of the Titans, things like that, that like eventually you knew the scenes were coming, the ones that were going to make you scared, but they scared the shit out of you, and yet at the same time, you, like, couldn't look away or whatever.
Oh, it's the beauty of it there. That's the true beauty of it. It's like, you know the music's changing, so you're like, oh, crap.
it's kind of funny when I think back, some of the fondest kind of memories I have of, like, nostalgia are the things that, certainly when I was younger, it'd be this thing like Clash of the Titans or Godzilla where I'd watch it and I'd be simultaneously terrified and like in enthralled. So I'd be like ready to cover my eyes or ready to hide behind a couch. But I wanted to watch until I got too scared or whatever. So for me, especially when I was really little, that was always things like, you know, Ray Harryhausen stuff with Clash of the Titans or Godzilla or something like that. And those are the things that I kind of still go back to now.
Hey, folks at home, this is your host Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break. Do you guys like the Comic Chronicle podcast, and do you like getting in-depth interviews with people of, moreover, not interviews, but conversations with people in the businesses? Well, guess what? If you love film and television, go check out the Film World podcast that I host on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and filmworld.podbean.com, because I get to talk to people all over from the business of film and TV, of actors, creature actors, writers, directors, cinematographers, all these people, VFX artists, hell. They all come onto the show. We give in-depth conversations about what they do. People from Jurassic World, Planet of the Apes, Transformers, Godzilla, numerous times, you know, and voice actors. And we give all these in-depth conversations with you guys from all sorts of ranges of different things on the Film World podcast. So if you guys like the Comic Chronicle podcast, you'll probably like Film World. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Hopefully you guys are enjoying the show. And now back to the conversation at hand. I dig it. Yeah, you always gotta love the classics. And now I think we can both agree that we may have been hiding, because I feel the same way. At first I was, you kind of hid a little bit, but now we're just like cheering, like, oh, this monster's murdering and eating people, as we're in the back, like, yeah, you go, man!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, I think it's, you always gotta keep those in mind, because I think those types of classic movies, like the ones you've mentioned, definitely can fuel your creative art and what you do. And who the hell knows, like, I'm one of the weird guys that when I work on a comic, like a script or something like that, or say if I'm working on a movie prop, then what I'd like to do is put on a movie I've seen before or something like that, related to it. People call me nuts, but I'm like,
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're like, how do you do that? And like, do you make this good work and also have that on the back? I'm like, it adds to the creative juices, because would you rather work in silence or like, come on now.
Oh, yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of comic artists who will create, you know, a whole specific playlist for their projects or whatever, so they can listen to that, like, while they're working. And I don't go as far as to make a playlist, but a kind of, like, set of bands or a few albums or something will kind of, like, make their way to the top, or, you know, or the same thing, or a movie, something that's, like, feels a little bit related to what you're working on, or at least, you know, I don't necessarily consciously choose these things, but I'll kind of notice, like, oh, I keep going back to this thing feels right to listen to or watch while I'm working on this project.
Oh, yeah, and it's, I think, as a recommendation, Andrew, by the way, too, and the listeners out there, Film Score Radio on Pandora.
Yeah.
Wonders.
I love film scores. Yeah, absolutely.
That's wondrous on there. And by the, I gotta ask you a question. Do you still listen to Pandora?
I do, yeah, okay. I do. I've found some, you know, if I'm like, oh, I like this band, and I'll pop on the Pandora station for that or whatever, and after a little bit of thumbs upping and thumbs downing, I've found new bands that I've hadn't heard of previously, and they've become some of my favorite bands, like, I'll still pull it up and see what it'll recommend.
All right. You may laugh at this, but I'm being completely honest with you. I was on a movie set the other day, and I was told somebody, the only reason why I asked this question is because somebody yelled at me, not really yelled, they kind of like snickered a little bit, and then a bunch of other people agreed, is that I'm an old man for listening to Pandora still.
Well, I do, and I also might be an old man. I don't really feel old, but there are probably a few things I do that are old manish.
But Pandora, yeah, man.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. They've got an algorithm to recommend things to you, and when I, it's, but like I said, with a couple of thumbs upping and thumbs downing, they're going to hit a playlist that I'm, like, super on board with.
Right? It's like, it bewildered me, and I had to, like, put the Ask Somebody that, too, like, and put it out on the show. Listeners, is Pandora for old people? Let me know, because I grew up with that, so pop off. It's like,
using, like, YouTube Music by now or something.
No, Spotify was the one. They're like, it's all about Spotify, old man. I'm like, you're only, like, 5 years younger than me. Get out of here.
Well, I like Spotify, too, but, like, what I like about Spotify is you can, you know, choose what you want to listen to, and you can also go down the rabbit hole of being, like, these are similar artists or something like that.
Right.
But sometimes you just want a mishmash. You just want a computer to, like, put a playlist together, and that's when I go to Pandora, you know?
It's true. Yeah, it's like, oh, man, I guess we're old men, Andrew. And I'm an old man at 22, apparently, is what I've been told. So.
All right, well, I'm 35, so if I use Pandora and you're 22, you might be acting like an old man. I might be an actual old man, and you might just act like one.
Well, my receding hairline definitely agrees with you, man. So, like, to be completely honest here, it is true. That's not a joke. It is. Well, speaking of the movies and whatnot, Andrew, I gotta ask, man, is what were your top, like, give us your top five sci-fi fantasy movies, do you think, that really you take with you when you work on comics?
I have the hardest time, like, kind of quantifying things in that fashion.
Oh, no.
I know that, like, when I'm like working, I go back to things like I like to watch Krull every once in a while. Oh. I think Krull is really fun. I love and it's like I think I'm pretty lonely in this aspect, but I absolutely love Prometheus. I go back to Prometheus a lot.
Really.
Yeah, I love it. I'm like on the edge of my seat when I watch that one.
Dude, you're the 1%er. You keep going, man. You keep loving that Prometheus.
I am. I don't know why. Like even the last Aliens, it's like, nah, I'm still on board with Prometheus over that. But
well, I'll agree with you on that one actually. And there's a bunch of people I know in the business that are probably gonna lop my head off for this, pun intended. Because they're like, Prometheus is terrible, and I've always quietly been with you on that sign of. It was actually kind of good.
I love it. When I ask people, I'm like, what's so terrible about it? I never get an answer that shakes me from my love for it. I love that movie.
Yeah.
It's always a feast for my eyes, and plot wise, it never like sets me down. I never get bored. It's always bringing me into the next thing.
Right.
But I watch a lot of kaiju movies, too. I love kaiju movies. And I didn't think they really showed up in my work too much until I realized how many large monsters crush buildings in some of my recent comics.
You're talking to a fellow kaiju fan, man. Like, I've been a fan for about since 2 or 3 years old. So, I mean, I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
You had one, too, in recently. I mean, it wasn't at first. An issue, I can't remember which issue it was that I read it in, too. It started as the mini blob, and then it just grew and grew and grew, and I'm like, oh my god. Of a Hilloper, and I don't remember which issue number that was.
I think it either shows up in issue 10 or 11.
It might have been.
And it grows through the next couple issues.
Yeah. It was a whole continuous arc thing of that, and that was brilliant. I'm like, yes, it's the blob, but then it turns into Hedora, and it's amazing.
It did feel like Hedora. The thing is, like, when I started, I was thinking more, like, the inspiration for it started in a place that was more like, I love Miyazaki, and so, and there's a lot of Miyazaki in the third volume of Hedlopper, I feel like, and so it kind of started as, you know, I'm, like, Spirited Away, No Face starts turning into, like, a giant blob the more he eats, so it kind of, that blob creature kind of started being relatively inspired by that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. But then by the time I actually worked on the designs and kept drawing it larger and larger, eventually I was like, oh my god, this thing is turning into looking more and more like Hedora, which is maybe not, Hedora's not my favorite kaiju, but it's one of my favorite kaiju movies. Like, that is such a bizarre flick. There's like,
it's terrifying.
Cut scenes, and there's like little like disco club scenes in that movie.
It was really the I love it, don't get me wrong. I'm like looking at a plushy Hedora that I have on a shelf in my workshop right now. But and it's true, and I really thought that was the movie. I saw it at the age of 12 on VHS, and I thought, this is what happens if you take drugs and make Godzilla.
Yeah, totally agree. I'm like, that it's in terms of the Godzilla movies, for me anyways, it's like easily the trippiest of the Godzilla movies. Like, some of the tone in that movie, I don't want to say feels out of place for Godzilla movies, but it stands out as like a particularly kind of funky, odd one. I mean, I love it. It's It's one of my favorites for that reason.
If you're a Godzilla fan, I found out that you are a fan. Like, almost every Godzilla fan is a fan of that. And people who I've interviewed on the other podcast I host, Film World, like people who have played Godzilla characters in suits, like monsters and stuff, they have all said, we love, like, every single one of them has loved Godzilla vs. Ghidorah. So that is, like, the world-renowned kaiju fandom movie there.
I'm glad it's well-received, because it's a cool one.
Oh, God, it's... Didn't they murder a cat in that one?
Oh, God, probably.
I think Ghidorah, like, his, like, melting of people, he murdered a cat, if I remember right. Oh, God. Now people are gonna be ticked. But, no, like, I could definitely see inspiration in like, Headlopper and whatnot, too, man. Like, that's... It's cool to see that, because I think that's something that people are like, oh, that's bad. Like, there's a little bit of people out there who say that, like critics and other workers and comics, stuff like that, too, and other mediums. But I think that's something that's necessary, you know? Like, it's good to take inspiration from other creative outlets, because, you know, if it works and if it does well, you know, maybe you can maybe take a tad bit, like a seed from the tree, and then make it into something glorious, you know? Make it into another beautiful tree, but maybe it's red instead of green or something.
I mean, I think how inspiration kind of manifests itself is often kind of subconscious. It's often only when I look back at my work that I can kind of see, like, oh, I was really excited about XYZ while I was working on this book. And while I'm kind of in it, I'm just trying to make, you know, a comic or tell a story that I think I would like. I'm trying to, like, have fun making it, and I'm trying to make a comic that I would be a fan of. And so it's usually only, like, I didn't kind of realize until after I drew all of Volume 3, looking back at it, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of monsters crushing the city here. And I was just like, I didn't occur to me. To me, I was just writing and drawing this kind of, like, this fantasy comic I've made for a number of years, and it wasn't until much later that I was like, oh yeah, you can kind of see the things that I'm a fan of if you're looking for it.
Which isn't bad, which is not bad at all, because obviously there's a huge fan base, by the way, for Headlopper, and I love that, because Apocalyptic Girl, I love that too, but for some odd reason, Headlopper really strikes a chord with me, and I don't know what it is with the series. It's one of those where maybe it's the monsters in it too, and the magic, and witches. Like, you have literally one of the, I don't know if you'd count it as a B or an A character, a beheaded witch. And it's amazing. I love the witch's head. And I'm drawing a blank on the name right now, but I love the witch's head. It's honestly, like, I'm like, Headlopper's amazing, but the witch's head. I love the character.
I mean, her name's Agatha.
Agatha,
I mean,
there we go.
To me, Agatha is an A character. Headlopper, it's called Headlopper because I like the name, but at the end of the day, it's about Norgo and Agatha. Like, that's really who they're about. Like, they can't be one without the other. She's not an item. She's a character. He's not going to lose her. Or, I mean, not for, you know, or when he loses her, he's going to track her down again.
Oh, yeah, no matter what the cost. Like, really, yeah, no matter what the cost.
Like, it's as much about her as it is about Norgo. And she's probably, I would say overall, she's more popular than Norgal. She's usually people's favorite character.
If they do make a pop figure of him, which I really hope they do, it better include her head in there. Like, I'm just saying. That would be amazing. And they're just like, well, Agatha's got to be in it, because she's like a little tiny thing, he can hold it. In the world of pop figures holding everything now, because everybody gets a Funko at this point, so it's like Netflix. Right, yeah. Oh, you sign up for us? There's a show for you. Like, man, I'm brilliant. Just brilliant. And I gotta say, too, is you've done a lot of indie work in your own... You're doing your own series, right? Like, you've done Apocalyptic Girl, you've done Headlopper, but do you have, like... I'm curious, because I always like to ask freelancers, fellow freelancers, this question of, do you want to work for the big two at one point, or do you think you're happy doing, you know, your own indie work with the companies you're working with?
I mean, it's a little bit of both. I hope I have I hope I'm lucky enough to have a career long enough where I can do a handful of things. Working for the big two has never been my goal, since I never thought I would get to this point, so I never really thought the way I like to draw that would be on the table. But those are also the comics I grew up drawing, so to me, there's still toys that I would enjoy playing with. You know, whether that'll happen or not, I don't know. Well, who who knows? There's certainly no plans at the moment, and I'm also, like, super excited to still work on my books. I mean, writing your own books, if you're not having fun doing them, it's kind of your fault, you know? Yeah. You should have written yourself something more fun to draw or whatever. And so that's my thing, is I'm always just trying to have fun, and so far, it's worked out for me.
And that's good to hear, because there's people who are like, I just want to work for these, and I'm like, oh, we're just doing it for that, and this project is just to show off this. It's like, no, you got to do something. If you're going to do it, put the passion into it, put the love into it, sort of thing. And I can tell you love the work that you're doing. I mean, and it's good to hear that, man. Like, I love that. I hear that from fellow creators in that sense, because if you don't have the love for what you're doing with it, especially for, like you said, for a creator-owned book, and it's your fault. And I agree with that 100%, because who the hell's telling you what to do? You know, maybe an editor, that's it.
Nobody.
Yeah, like, maybe the company, like, whatever company you're working for is like, we can't publish this, this is too graphic. And that's probably about it. But for you, I think you're okay.
Yeah, I haven't run into any issues. And for my sake, I kind of, in terms of, like, you know, a book writing or something that's, like, say, graphic or whatever. Mm. I mean, for me, I'm not... I mean, in Headlopper, there's a lot of violence, but it's very cartoony.
Yeah.
It's usually just blood, it's usually like oceans of blood. I get too like creeped out by, you know, viscera, by organs and bone chunks or whatever. Like, that's not really my jam. So I kind of keep it cartoony. I kind of liken it to, like, you know, in, like, Kill Bill, you know, like, I'm thinking of, like, the fight for, like, the, what is the gang called?
Oh,
like, something, Crazy 88s or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah, yeah.
So that huge fight, he's just, there's just, like, the Bright's just chopping limbs off everywhere, and it never looks real, you know. There's like, the blood looks thin, it looks transparent, it's not the right color of real blood or whatever, and there's just kind of like, to me, when I see it, there's this almost like communication with the audience that just says like, hey, we're suspending our disbelief together for the sake of style or whatever, or, you know, or just for the sake of maybe even using practical effects or something. So that's kind of how I like in Headlopper violence, is like, I'm not really trying to gross somebody out with it, you know. It's kind of just it's just for fun.
It's true. I really get that vibe from it, and I'm not gonna lie to you, there was a point when I saw the creature eat, I keep calling it the blob. I know it's not its name,
that's fine, you can call it the blob.
It's like, I'm like, it's the blob. It's, we could call it Hedorah, but then we get sued. But is to whole sues, let me tell you. The blob, I always thought, like, when there was that sound, when he grabbed one of the villagers in there, and he's just like, oh, damn my eyes, and he takes him in, and you hear, and you see, like, you wrote in that crunch, I'm like, oh my god, yeah, I'm like, ooh, like, you wince a little bit, but then you're like, yes.
Well, I also, both in my writing, and even more so in my art, or in that case, sound effects, I try to use repetition as much as possible, and kind of create, you know, either audible or visual, like, almost symbols or whatever. So I think for the blob, anytime it killed anything, I made it go crunch. So hopefully by the end you would understand crunch just meant it killed this thing. Like, it's, you know.
It's not Goosebumps Monster Blood where they're going to come back at the end and somehow they're still alive, have to hold in their breath for, like, 5 days.
Yeah. So like that. Yeah. And so, yeah, so crunch definitely meant death in regards to the blob.
Well, I got to ask you this, Andrew, is because one of those comic series I write on now is a giant monster series, right? And you're a fellow giant monster kaiju fan. Would you ever want to consider maybe doing it? Because as I pitched it to the company I work for, I was like, we don't have the mini series like this. They're like, you're right, done, cleared. I'm like, okay, that was easy. Would you ever see yourself maybe doing a kaiju book? Because I could definitely see myself forking out the books for that.
I wanted to do a kind of kaiju slash just a strictly monster book. Mm. Very, very kaiju-ish. Just a one-shot. Maybe not even, like, really long. But, And I was going to try to do that before I got back into hip-hopper, and I just don't have time for it. But then also, when I was starting to feel a little, I was like, oh man, I really wanted to do this thing. I would have really enjoyed drawing this. And then at the same time, I felt a little bit better when I flipped back through Volume 3 at that point, and I was like, you know what, I kind of just did a kind you know, there's just more kind of kaiju influence in Volume 3 than I expected. So that's how I talked myself out of being bummed that I wouldn't have time to do it.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, I would love to. It got me thinking, when I was thinking about doing that project, it made me realize that, like, in those stories, you get to enjoy these really great monster designs and monster stories, but your human story is kind of wide open. Like, you can really tell any kind of story you want using the kind of the B story, the human story that just, like, you know, attaches a, you know, some kind of narrative or whatever to monsters destroying buildings. So I got excited about that idea. I was like, you know, you can tell an entirely different story. So it'd be nice to do that, but at the same time, I'm also, at least I can still do whatever I want with Headlopper in that universe.
That's true. You have the free creative reign. It's like, the going back, that's the nice part. You can do whatever you want. So if you want to make a side story, you can do a side story on just like a monster or something like that. But I dig that. Like, yeah, there's, I don't know, man. I definitely still want to see, though. You're right 100%, but I still want to see a kaiju book from you. I don't know what it is. I think it would be really cool. Whenever you get the time, I know you're working on Headlopper, but whenever you get the time, like, if something ever happens or you're like, I got extra time now, please, I'm a fan, please make it.
I mean, for me, partially, I wanted to design the monsters. And also, there a challenge I was kind of setting to myself is I really love kaiju movies from like the 60s and 70s. There's something about them, like, where special effects were, you know, more difficult. Everything had to be either in camera or
practical. Just practical, right?
Practical, yeah. There's something about that that seems, having those handcuffs, having those kind of technological limitations, I always kind of feel like forced them to be more creative and kind of take, you know, interesting routes or whatever. So part of the handcuffs I wanted to put on myself for making a kaiju comic was to also do my best to try to draw all of the, you know, I'll call them props, to try to make them look like they're in scale. Like, I love a kaiju movie when the tanks, when the cars are very clearly miniatures. They're not like a B-roll of like a tank going down an actual street. It's very obviously a little toy. You know what I mean? So I really wanted to try to challenge myself to try to draw that thing, to try to draw not a monster, but a rubber suit of a monster, and try to draw, you know, little toy cars instead of cars. Just because I love that stuff. I love stop motion. I love the puppets. I love all the kind of handmade things. You can really see the mark of, like, human creativity all over that stuff.
Right? Oh, it's glorious. It's glorious. This has turned into the monster podcast now, but it's so glorious.
Yeah. Well, that'll happen if you get me.
You know what? That's perfectly fine. With two monster lovers nerding out, it's totally fine. It's, you know what? It's almost October. Fuck off, people.
It's early enough. Yeah, we're close enough.
Yeah. Like, what's the point? So you're obviously working on Headlopper now. Where do you see it going, buddy? Like, where do you see this thing going? Like, where do you want Headlopper to go? Do you want to go in for another, like, 5-10 years? Do you see a definitive end? Because I see, in all my series, I see an end. And that's only because I don't want it to drown out and be stupid. And I don't want fans to be pissed. I don't want to ruin it for people. You got to have that. I think you got to have that end. Do you have that?
I'm still working out how far I want to go, you know, because I don't want to get so ambitious with it that I don't get there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the same. I like a finality to something. I like an arc. I like a kind of walk into the sunset moment of, I like the satisfaction of that. So I'm kind of on the, and I am kind of turning the ship more and more towards that direction. It's just a matter of, you know, how much I want to roll the dice. Like, at one point, I kind of fantasized about it being 9 volumes, and I've got kind of an arc idea that I think would hit, that would hit that pretty comfortably, but at the same time, that's really ambitious. So, like, if I'm not so lucky to get that far, I don't want, I want to get to that point. If I'm gonna plan for it, I want to hit that thing. So I'm up in the air of how long I want to stretch it out for. But yeah, I wanted to get to a place where there's kind of closure in some fashion. Even if I got there and I was like, I'm still having a blast and I want to like start a new quest or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. I have to make that decision when I get there, but I'd like to have a kind of a touchdown moment, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where you've worked on it for so long because, I mean, how many years are you on it now?
I mean, it's probably, well, I started self-publishing it, and so we did that, and then I did Apocalyptic Girl at Dark Horse, and then I went back to Headlopper with Image Comics. And so, all told, I think maybe 8 years I've had characters with me, yeah.
That's almost a decade of your life, and yeah, it probably will be a decade.
Yeah, and I'm 3 volumes in, but that's still, I don't know, 700 pages or something like that, or 600 pages.
Yeah, that's why it's so good. That's why. You've had all the time to do it and to make it so good, man. Like, it's one of those things where people are like, it's done within 2 years. No, if you take the more time on a project, I think it really can fester and develop and be this big thing that it is. So I think those almost decade of work, it shows, you know?
Well, I appreciate it, certainly. Yeah. I think it lends itself. I don't think it's necessarily an easy road, but the book, the series, like the single issues come out quarterly, so they're much bigger issues. They're anywhere from, you know, 40 to 50 pages or so. And it takes me the full 3 months to do it, but at the same time, per trade, instead of having it, you know, your average trade is maybe, I don't know, 80 to 100 pages or something like that, maybe a little bit more than that. The Headlopper trades, the first one's like 280 pages, but the next two are hover around 200, 230, something like that. So the stories are a little bit longer. But for me, like as a reader, like that I like that pacing better. The kind of like your standard series that's coming out monthly, it feels very rushed to me, or me trying to work at that pace feels very rushed. You can imagine the types of things that you'd have to sacrifice. Some of that's like atmosphere or tone or action. That's my thing. It's like with Hip Hop, I'm trying not to compromise any of the aspects that I consider to be Headlopper, so I want quarterly issue to have some aspect, or rather all the aspects of Headlopper in each one, and so that ends up being a longer story than a lot of kind of comic book trade paperbacks.
Yeah, well, it really, you can't really argue that, and as a reader, you can't really be like, I don't want this, because you're getting more content, so, you know, it's one of those things where if it's longer than most trade paperbacks, that's fine. At least to me, that's fine, because would you not want more? You know?
It makes you wait longer, but yeah, you get more once it shows up.
Yeah, it's worth it. Patience, you know? Patience is a virtue given to the few, I suppose, but still. You know, like, oh, man. Well, Andrew, I gotta say, man, it's been a blast having you on the show. It really has. We're coming near the end here a little bit, because I don't want to take too much more time from you, because it is late for you. So we're kind of going to the end here, but man, I gotta say, thanks for coming on, and like, where can people find a Headlopper if they want to read it?
Yeah, sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, and you know I love talking to a fellow monster lover.
Yeah.
But Headlopper, it should be widely available at any of your local comic shops. If they aren't already carrying it, they certainly can. It's available to all of them. I highly recommend shopping at a local shop, a brick and mortar store. It's not only is it something I hope we can have forever, but it's a place where people could talk about books and stories, and really, really kind of like we can learn a lot from just hanging out and talking comics and everything. So please get things at your local comic book shop. If you live as rural as I did growing up, it's still available, you know, say on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or anything like that. A quick Google will get to your door one way or another.
Can I be honest with you about something about brick and mortar comic shops with Headlopper? So my store gets it, right? It's never on the stand for a long time.
Hey, that's good for me, I guess.
Yeah, I just want to be honest with you on that one, because I would see it, and I'd go back maybe a couple days later to pick up some more stuff, or I'd just go back, like, the next week or something like that. And I'm like, well, and I'd always look, and it was, like, an empty slot sort of thing. I'm like, what is that? They're like, oh, Headlopper. I'm like, oh. So it's like, it sells, man. Like, your work is really popular and whatnot, and I think it's really good, and I think, man, just keep doing what you're doing. And, man, as a fellow monster lover, keep it up.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Of course. And, brother, where can they find you at on social media, too? Because I know we always have to promote that.
Yeah, for sure. I mostly use Instagram. Obviously, it's really good for images, so I post all kinds of process stuff on there while I'm working on the comics. I basically just kind of consider it like a trailer for Headlopper at this point. Yeah. It's simply my name, Andrew McLean. No punctuation or numbers attached to it. It's just Andrew, and then my last name is McLean. And there's all kinds of stuff on there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kind of like a profile almost. Here's your resume. Here's my Instagram sort of thing. You know,
yeah,
that's
pretty much.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, other than that, in terms of, I do a lot of conventions, I would try to keep my website up to date on all those kind of appearances, and that is artofandrewmclean.com, and you can see my kind of convention schedule on there, and if we're doing any like comic shop signings or anything like that. But those are the two places.
I know you live on the East Coast, but I don't know if that's too much. But no, if you live on the East Coast, man, you live there, man. So I'm on the West Coast. But if you're ever down here, you're always invited to a party or something like that, Andrew. And just to hang out, because we need to geek out about monsters more.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I get out there as often as I can. A lot of good towns, a lot of good food on the West Coast.
That's true. Well, depending where you go, I think. I mean, I'm in Arizona, so I don't know if that counts. There's going to be a shit ton of people from California who are like, that's not West Coast. Hey.
I live in Massachusetts. It feels pretty West Coast to me.
Fair enough. Well, definitely, you're invited back any amount of times you want to be on here, Andrew. You're always welcome back. Any final words to people out there?
Just read comics. Just read. Keep reading. And if you don't like comics, I don't know why you're listening to this, but there are other things to read.
Fair enough. All right, folks at home, take those wise words. Read comics. Also, read Headlopper. Wise words from Andrew. You can follow me, folks, at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram or at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter. And Andrew, thanks again, man, for coming on. And stay classy, everybody.